You're listening to another episode of Open Source CXO, the podcast designed to share insights on how to excel in your business using technology, regardless of the industry. Host Robert Kehoe is a self-taught software developer who has grown to the role of CEO. Renowned for his collaborations with organizations such as Stanford University, Nelnet, and Louis Vuitton, he continually seeks new challenges to conquer in the world of tech. Accompanying him is Don Blackburn, a veteran COO with over 25 years of experience in cultivating diverse relationships and driving innovation in various technical projects. Each week, they'll be sitting down with some of the nation's foremost technology leaders to develop an open source playbook, drawing from their firsthand experiences in the field. Let's talk some tech.
Today, we're joined by John Ketty. John, welcome, first off. John is with Lazarus. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about Lazarus as a company and your role in AI?
Absolutely. So first of all, thank you very much for having me here. Really excited to be here and have this conversation. As you noted, I'm John Ketty of Lazarus AI. My entire background, or the vast majority of my career, has been IT delivery. So I've been an executive of different companies like ING, Aflac, and Chubb. You can see I skew a little more towards insurance, which is a heavily regulated industry and I think very helpful background for what I deal with now every day. A few months ago, I moved full-time into AI and regulated industries like insurance, and that's how I spend all day, every day. Just real quick on Lazarus AI, we are an AI technology company. We build fundamental and foundational AI technologies, such as large language models, VKGs. We have proprietary OCR products to help ingest documents and data into our systems. But we are really at the foundational level of AI technology, and I get the great opportunity to work with companies all through the industry in terms of what we can bring to bear in understanding what the challenges and the understanding and the opportunities are in the marketplace today.
Gotcha. What's the makeup of your team, the company itself? Like, well, what's the makeup of the development team? I'm sure you guys employ several different types of either data scientists and whatnot. So I'm curious what that looks like.
Yeah, we're relatively early stage in some sense, more mature in other sense due to our involvement in heavily regulated and also the government, which really brings a certain maturity and discipline, whether you like it or not, it brings it. So we have a small go-to-market team, kind of the traditional salespeople, industry experts. We have a small data science team, led by our CEO and founder, who is also the chief data scientist. So very much hands-on day-to-day. Small operations team, and in the process right now of building out larger product and implementation teams. Because as I said earlier, we are at the foundational level. Nonetheless, as we engage with clients, there has to be some support and leverage of the models, of the technologies, of understanding exciting things like prompt engineering and how to do it. So we'll never be a service company, in my view, but we want to support companies. And frankly, we want to support partners, too, that would take our technology to market.
So when you say foundational level, I know that there's going to be several people listening to this podcast that have no idea what that actually means. So when you say foundational level, clearly you guys aren't in the business of building tools for companies, as and that's what you meant by service, I imagine. So what does foundational level mean? What do you guys provide? What value do you bring to these companies?
Absolutely. So when I say foundational level, that would include things like building large language models and small language models, because in 2023, there was this very interesting progression where early in 2023, every week, somebody had a larger model, larger. Then around April or May of 23, people were like, do they have to keep getting larger? Maybe smaller models would work just as well. And people began to quickly develop small language models and found that they could work just as well. Now, how did they do that so quickly? They were actually using large language model technology, but that's a different story. Now, nonetheless, smaller language models emerged, and people began to learn, gee, maybe the models don't have to get larger every single week in this endless search for the largest model, but maybe smaller, more focused models can work better. So look, what is a language model? Language models are trained on vast arrays of data. and patterns begin to emerge. And people can use those patterns to solve a variety of business problems. And, you know, as we've done throughout our careers, I said a lot of my careers, IT delivery, you guys do this every day. You're worrying about, well, data mapping and what's the format, what's the structure. And we have all these expensive tools, and I'll try not to use names. I may slip, but I'll try not to. They never quite worked. They were expensive, but never really quite worked. Well, these models show us the possibilities of being able to map and to pattern without all of this overhead. The models learn and have insights beyond what we can even understand from the data at first blush. And that's why they're so exciting. Now, just real quick, you may say, well, okay, these large language models, these patterning, all the things you're describing, there are several companies out there that do this. Yes, absolutely. What we do is we take a business-focused, we train our models on business documents, much more tighter, much more focused. A lot of the other companies go out and train on everything on Earth, or at least everything on the web.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. When I'm at the airport with my kids, I'll turn them loose on ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't turn them loose on one of our models. They wouldn't find that much fun.
Yeah.
It's a business-focused model. And so because we start in a different place, we end up in a different place, having far fewer error rates and so on, because, again, we're more narrowly trained for the business domain and for enterprises that want the capabilities of a large language model or a small one, but don't have the error rate and the other things that come when you just go out and train on everything on Earth.
So ChatGPT really started with the public in mind. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
So they were going after the consumer, whereas you're going after more the corporate and verticals, which sounds kind of smart. So you can feed data into those models without having a specific client data. You can just feed general data in the insurance industry, for example, since we're talking about that.
Can do both. Absolutely, we can and have done with medical records and documents and other things so that we have more business domain. Now, there are still some times when very large Fortune 500 insurance company says, but no, you need our documents, and we need to even be able to provide citations back. Okay, well, we could do that also.
Okay.
But you're right, that's a very important distinction, and I do think across all industries, people are still massively confused over, well, what is the capability of a language model, large or small?
Mm-hmm.
How would I apply it? And then they start to get very confused about the risk and the challenges because their mind maps to these models that are very broadly trained and have, you know, powerful opportunities
mm-hmm.
and powerful solutions, but they're solutions for certain problems, not for every problem.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, I think that's the big challenge, right, is getting enough data that you can feed it into where it's effective and it's returning the type of results you want.
I think having Google's version or ChatGPT, everybody thinks of AI now as something that you can kind of chat with. But honestly, that's just it's just one, possibility within AI. Are there any kind of main, the clients that you guys work with, are there any, what do you guys use them for? Is there anything that you guys specifically use them for aside from just your typical, what everybody goes to is, oh, I can just chat with it, and it can give me back data.
Custom report.
Yeah,
and
I mean, there's things like that, but is there anything else that that you guys do a lot of that doesn't immediately come to mind? I just know that there's going to be a lot of people who listen to this and go, well, I don't know how AI can really work for my company. And that's always the biggest challenge with us.
Yes.
We've got to pitch that. We've had a few of our clients come to us and say, hey, How can we leverage AI? We keep hearing about it. We don't know. Like, they've built out full ERPs with us, and they still don't know exactly how, AI can work within their infrastructure. So we have to go and we have to pitch it to them. So do you guys work with anything, unique or fun or specific with your customers aside from just your typical chatting back and forth, your little chat program?
Oh, absolutely. And again, that goes to the heart of not just our business, but where I think AI technologies that are successful at the enterprise level will have to go. So any chat or engagement that we would do would be on a business domain topic. Summarize these following medical records for me. in one page. So that somebody, in our world, we call multimodal, which means could be video, x-rays, text, doctor's handwriting, variety of modes, as opposed to, let's say, an underwriter having to review every single page. And in just pick one example, life insurance, it literally can be hundreds of pages, as well as all these other document types. Can we summarize them in one page? That'd be an example. Or an example where someone's doing underwriting collection. But again, they have a variety of documents and formats, and you say, well, we could build a solution and we could try to do all this data mapping, but as soon as another document shows up, it snaps. Yep. Right. No, not that's ever happened to ActiveLogic.
No.
Right. But those other companies sometimes have run into these problems. Well, AI then can help map that without a highly defined, regimented structure, because it can, from the patterning in the reasoning, it can figure out how to pattern. On other things such as claims processes, having to review, is this a legitimate claim? Does it meet the contract? Are there contradictory information in the documents? You know, we have seen that where very large companies have very regimented processes and really talented people. But literally, this stuff can come in, it can eat up hundreds of pages. And we've seen our tools and technologies point out, you know, there appears to be a discrepancy in the police report, from the video, from what was written. And we are very, very big on human in the loop. So our models will kick out and say, a human really needs to look at that. There's contradictory information embedded in all of this. And in the anecdote that I just shared, that is a case where the humans missed it. Not because they were stupid humans or lazy or not paying attention. It's just really difficult to take all this document and information and data, have it thrown at you. You're working on the clock. And you've got to discern, you know, is there something here questionable or is everything expected?
Interesting.
Fair enough. I know another big challenge that we've come across is, especially with a lot of, we work with a lot of mid-sized companies. So convincing sort of leadership to buy into AI, there's a lot of scared people out there. They don't understand. Not only do they not understand how AI can possibly work for their business and how it could make things just vastly different, more efficient, and more accurate, but they're a little scared of it. They don't know, like, what if the data's wrong? What's the risk involved, do you think? I mean, you seem to work with a lot of insurance companies trying to analyze and get people through the entire process. What's the risk of, getting incorrect information or saying somebody's approved for something for this or that when they're really not, or the other way around? What's the risk of failure here with AI?
So let me just first discuss large versus small, and then we'll go to risk. So one of the things that has become fascinating to me in the last year is as I've had a long career in IT delivery in the industry and so on, as I came into this role, I said, large companies. And that's true. We engage with very large companies. Here's what's been surprising to me. The number of small companies we engage with. And here's the reason why, I believe, because the smaller, more mid-sized companies are seeing an opportunity now. This is how I leapfrog the competition.
Yeah.
This is how I start fighting way above my.
And they're a little more agile. They can make those changes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was talking to someone I know, to your point, recently, and she went from a Fortune 5 global insurer down to a small company I'd never heard of. And I asked her about it, and she said, because at the last company, we just sat around and drank coffee and had PowerPoints about AI, and that this company, we don't like. So that's just a sample of one, but that was her view of the world.
Yeah.
And so you're correct. But they also, I think, also view this as an existential risk to us. What if the larger entities really start doing this at scale, so this could wipe us out? So again, the smaller and more mid-sized companies have surprised me to what degree they are interested in fighting above their weight and really.
That's leaning. Actually really fantastic to hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's the only way they're going to compete if those bigger companies decide to take advantage.
Correct. And if Some of those larger companies move more slowly, and a moderate-sized or even a smaller entity can move quickly. One of two things, they gain competitive advantage, or two, when the large company starts moving, they have experience. They know what works and what doesn't work and what to watch out for, and the larger company may jump in very quickly and accidentally stumble. Now, let's talk about risk. Since all my career has been in heavily regulated industries, I alluded a couple times to insurance, but I've also had securities licenses due to the different corporations I was involved with as an officer. So I know heavily regulated industries, and I know risk, and even part of my background has been being a CISO. So this is a very legitimate topic that, regardless of industry, we should all talk about very candidly with AI. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think companies consistently miss is, how do you reduce risk with AI? How can you use these tools and technologies to mitigate risk? Back to the example I gave on claims adjudication, our tool caught something no human would have caught. Humans missed it, in fact. We know that. So how do you use these capabilities and technologies to reduce risk? So that would be one mindset I would suggest. The second thing, with any technology, and especially with AI, think about, where is the human and where is the technology and what are the boundaries? Mm-hmm. It is fascinating to me how many companies are scared to death of AI. Then they want to launch in and they think, well, humans won't be involved. Well, wait a minute, hold on. If you're concerned about risk, don't leap to AI just taking over and doing things. It right. makes no sense. So you need to think about, where do we want humans involved and where do we feel comfortable with technology? That will vary process to process and may vary task to task. So there may be some collection tasks that we talked about earlier, but totally fine with AI pulling it all together. And then there may be steps in the process, another task, where there needs to be a review. And we may say AI can go so far and a human needs to step in to take it from here. There may be decision points that AI will get part of it prepped up and humans make final decisions. There may be tasks, the decisions you turn completely over to AI because a mistake is going to be $10 and it's not worth a human looking at it. There may be other tasks where you're really confident in AI and you're still going to have a human look at it because that's $1 million decision. So the point is, companies need to rigorously think through, where are we comfortable with technology? Where are we comfortable with the human? That mix may change over time, but think it through up front. Don't go into AI saying, oh my God, what is it going to do to us? Let's just cut it loose. That is not going to turn out well for anybody.
Right, right. Since we're talking about the money, so what is it cost effective for those smaller to mid-sized companies? I haven't seen a lot of conversation around, everybody wants AI. I know what it costs for us to develop, you know, applications that include AI, but I'm just wondering, from your perspective, is it becoming affordable to the small to mid-sized companies, or is it kind of priced out to where only the big boys get to play?
Very important point. So just like with risk, we need to address that heads on. With cost, we need to be realistic. Over the last really 40 to 50 years, I guess more than that if I knew what decade we're in, since World War II, when data science and a lot of the capabilities of AI began to be realized at a theoretical perspective, and you look from World War II really up prior to the 80s or 90s of the last century, people said, well, this is all very theoretical, but nobody on earth could afford to do this, and there's not enough data. Mm-hmm. But we know Moore's Law grinding away, the rise of cloud computing, the web and data just proliferating and exploding, the cost dynamic is fundamentally different. We mm-hmm. now have cloud and we have data. So these statistical and data science concepts that before were just theoretical now are possible. Mm-hmm. But so we made huge progress on cost. But to your very good point, is it good enough? Mm-hmm. Will it work on a CBA? And my strong guidance for anybody is, don't just run off into the gold rush. Got to have AI no matter what the cost, no matter what the risk. No, manage the risk. Think about it up front. And it has to work on a cost-benefit level. Mm-hmm. And there is no doubt that today, despite the significant cost improvements, it is still cost prohibitive for many use cases and processes. Mm. And people should be, in my opinion, investigating, understanding, testing, and becoming more conversant in the world of AI. Before you move something to production, you need to prove out the CBA. And I would say for many companies and many processes, AI is not yet cost effective. Now, also,
and why is that? Is that because of the data training aspect of it? Is that just running the services on a server? What makes it so untouchable?
So a couple things. One is if you already have technologies in place and they're delivering value for you, you do not have to just enforce AI. You know, you do not have to commit random acts of AI just to feel good about yourself.
Right.
Right? If you've got something that's worked.
Jump aboard the train.
Exactly. It's working. You may not need it. In those cases, it's going to be really hard to cost justify
a move,
and that's okay. The second thing is, yes, you look at the cost of chips and so on. Huge price improvement, as I've said. Nonetheless, not cheap yet.
Uh-huh.
And that is why I do not believe companies, no matter how large you are, going to be building your own large language models or small language models. There's a significant cost of brain power, data scientists, GPUs, other hardware to run and support the data, the ingestion. This is not cheap by many of the standards we would think about. So for organizations who want to bring AI into their company, product companies that want to bring AI into their product roadmaps, solutions companies that need to go to market with AI, and I think all three of those are things that are being pursued and need to be pursued, you have to think about what is the right use case. Now, one of the other things I'll point out is sometimes we get involved in situations where people are thinking really, really narrowly. And that's good. You want to be focused, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, sometimes the cost of the tools and technologies and the organizational investment that you need to make is going to have to be broader to really get that benefit.
Sure.
The other thing is companies need to be willing to change.
Yeah.
So we talk about...
That's been our biggest challenge.
You're not the only one. You know, it's very, very common. Companies of all industries are fantastic about talking about change and innovation. Doing it, well, that's a different thing, right? And it's natural. Any of us, change is uncomfortable. I often say, if you're not uncomfortable, it's not really change.
Yeah.
So those are things that are, so, you know, again, if a company just said, we want AI because it's cool and we got all this stuff that works, let's just tear it out and we really don't want to change anything, I think the CBAs are still very, very difficult. For companies that say, we are willing to think far more broadly and holistically, we're really willing to break those silos, I think the cost point of the technologies are getting there today.
Okay, well, fantastic.
Yep.
Appreciate your time. Appreciate you doing this.
Entirely my pleasure.